Recall's proposal for restart was formulated 16 days ago. And today, we have Squadoosh. Mina Kimes, Clinton Yates, Pablo Torre. Let's go around that horn. I wonder if it were the players coming up with a proposal and the owners saying no, how that would play out in public perception. But the way it is right now, it's the players saying, or balking. They're maybe not saying no just yet, but they're balking at the idea of these salary cuts. And as reported by Jeff Passan and Jesse Rogers, here are the salary cuts. Believed to be north of 70%, nearly 80% for the highest paid players in the game, 50% for the league average. I don't need to say any more. Clinton Yates, how do you hear it?
This sounds to me like something that the owners are putting forward because they don't actually care about whether or not baseball returns. What they care about is exerting power over the Players Association. Because if you look at every single thing they presented, there's nothing that tells you, oh, this seems like it's reasonable as a way to get back to the field. Whether it's the proposal for how they're going to social distance while they play the game, whether it's these salary cuts, which, mind you, the players already said they're going to take a prorated salary for the games they're going to already play. It doesn't appear that this is something that is going to be productive towards getting back onto the field. Here's the issue. The owners have a communicative advantage. They don't have to tell you how much money they're actually making on baseball. So everything you see is that of the players, and the common person who looks at it says, oh, well, they should take that. That's obviously reasonable for playing the game. You don't know what they're giving back, not to welfare, to the owners themselves in order to put themselves at risk. I don't like it. It feels disingenuous overall.
Pablo Torre, how do you hear the salary cuts and this stalemate we're in proposal-wise?
It feels like a bad faith proposal, and it feels like bad strategy, even if you're not sympathetic to all of the millionaires and their fight against the billionaires, which is such a cliche at this point that we're numb to the order of magnitude difference that exists between these two groups. And it's bad strategy, Tony, because in some sense, this is the exact opposite of what the NBA does. The NBA makes alliances with its superstars. This is the MLB owners picking a direct fight, making a war against their superstars. They complain all the time. Mike Trout doesn't advertise baseball enough. He's not marketing himself and the game. So what do they do now? They ask for him to donate $14 or so million to a guy who does not need it at all in his owner, Artie Moreno. And so what happens? They're trying to pick a fight, not just with the superstars, but they're trying to make a fight between the superstars and the rank and file. It's a divide and conquer strategy. And maybe that works in the present tense if everybody really needs the money. But long term, this feels like you're poisoning the well, and you're preventing all of the growth that you want when it comes to these celebrity athletes that you say you really, really want.
And Mina Kimes, this specific report about the proposal, salary cuts north of 50%, some even close to 77%.
I agree with Pablo. I think this is a fight between millionaires and billionaires, and the billionaires would like to make it a fight between millionaires and multimillionaires. I don't think they will succeed, one, because the tactic is extremely transparent, two, because while those multimillionaires do make a great deal more than their peers, the lower paid players, they also make a great deal less than the owners. They are taking on all the risk here. They have shorter careers, and everyone's very aware of that dynamic. I don't think the players will be divided. They haven't been divided in the past, because while 65% of Major League players make $1 million or less, they're still more unified than, say, football players for structural reasons, and I think they're going to stand pat here.
Well, nothing has really been accomplished. The ebb and flow of this has been remarkable. You remember Snell's comments 2 weeks ago, and people jumped on him for that. I think we all recognize pay cuts have happened industry-wide, in other industries, all over, but 70% is a number we never heard before. But none of this addresses the pandemic part of the pandemic. None of this addresses the other employees for teams that aren't players who aren't making that million-dollar lifestyle. None of this even addresses the minor leagues. And Clinton Yates, I know you're worked up about that. Please, go ahead.
Well, the minor league issue is important is because it shows me where I should trust and where I should believe anybody has anybody's best interest involved. If you're not willing to invest in the very players that are going to continue to make your product available to make money, why should I believe that you actually care about the sport beyond the cash you can rake out of it from the players that are putting themselves at risk on the front lines? The Oakland A's aren't even paying, certain Astros, certain franchises aren't even paying everybody through the end of the year. The A's were trying to do it and they couldn't. The reason why that's important is because, hello, they are the ones who are going to be playing. You should be investing in them, not just using it as a cost to cut.
Mina Kimes?
I think this is appalling. The owner of the A's, John Fisher, he's worth $2 billion. Paying all the minor leaguers would cost $1 million. That's the equivalent of someone who's worth $100,000 paying $50. He can absolutely do it. I'm heartened to see other teams have not followed his lead, and I hope the rest of the league doesn't.
I say again, none of this even begins to address the pandemic part of the pandemic. That is truly the hardest part. Those are the problems no one has ever had to solve in the history of humankind. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. Ah, this is baseball just stuck its wheels in the mud here. We're going to move on now. Some progress for the NHL, though. Here we go. Let's talk about that. When they come back, 2014 playoff. So sorry, not sorry to the Red Wings, Senators, Sharks, Kings, Ducks, Devils, Sabres. Top four from each conference get a bye in the qualifying round, which they call the qualifying round, and play round robin just for some seeding in their first round. The first qualifying series will be the best of fives. Empty arenas and hub cities, two of them. And then there's testing again that we have to consider, but for today, let's just focus on the hockey of it. Mina, do you like this? What are the pros? What are the cons?
I do like it. It's imperfect, but perfect is the enemy of good right now. Is it fair that the 12th seeded Blackhawks have the same path as the 5th seed? No. Is the league probably trying to wedge them in to get access to that market? Yes. But who can blame them right now? If there was ever a team to allow them, right, some financial leeway, it would be now. And plus, it's going to be a thrilling tournament.
I think so, too. Pablo Torre, what are the pros? What are the cons of the 2014 playoff here?
The pros are that this is how you make the most people happy. Every team, every fan base just cares about one thing, and that is self-interest. Are we going to be a playoff team? So what does Gary Bettman do here? He says, okay, I'll be the Oprah of playoff berth. 16 teams, you get a berth, and you get a berth. Everybody can go to the postseason except for just 8. And right now, I know the regular season seems like this beautiful, delicious steak we want to dive our teeth into, but in reality, all we really care about is the postseason, and this pandemic for hockey is kind of a truth serum on that front.
It's just 7 teams that miss out in the playoffs because of the odd number of teams. Though if you want to add an 8, the Trailblazers will miss it in the NHL, and Damian Lillard will sit out the rest of the season.
That's right.
How about you, Clint Yates?
Yeah, the pros are that we get hockey back, but the cons are kind of obvious. You have some of the top teams complaining that those round-robin games aren't going to be at the same competitive level that those play-in games are, and so they're getting kind of a disadvantage on some level in terms of getting back to hockey shape by having a bye, which is a little strange. But the other con is, of course, if Canada doesn't want to change any of their rules to even let these people play and get on the ice safely, none of this is going to happen. So I like the idea in theory. Whether or not they can execute it or not is a different matter.
I'm not even worried about the execution right now. I just need good news. I just need theory. That's all I need. You know?
Yeah.
What's the best thing in the world? The hockey playoffs. The Stanley Cup playoffs are the best thing in the world. More of anything? More of everything! We'll take a break right now. Not more of us right now. We're taking a break. I shouldn't have said that as we go to a commercial break. Coming up, Jalen Ramsey. If he's about to be a $100 million Ram, why is he liking posts about him in a Washington jersey? Jalen Ramsey said his agent and the Rams are on the same page in their contract talks. Then, on a different page, he liked the post of himself in a Washington jersey. Then he unliked that post. Also, he said he won't hold out. All of this happening while Jordan Rodrigue of The Athletic tweeting out, suggesting to get ready for the largest contract in cornerback history. Pablo, would that be $20 million a year, $100 million over the lifetime? Do the Rams buy in or sell off here?
They have to buy in. They have to reset the market for cornerbacks with Jalen Ramsey. And by the way, an Instagram like and unlike is subtle compared to the time he drove a literal Brinks truck to the Jacksonville Jaguars facility. So the Rams traded for him, Tony, knowing all of that, and they gave up 2 firsts and a 4th. So this is a deal they have to make because of sunk cost reasons.
Glenn Yates?
Yeah, it's the same story every offseason ever since Jared Goff got signed. Another Rams player is up.
Exactly.
Another guy has to sign a huge deal, and they've got to figure out a way to get in the money. The problem is, after everybody else is gone, I know Aaron Donald's still there, they have to sign Ramsey. It's a talent thing, it's a star power thing, and they got to put butts in those seats. I don't think they have much of a choice.
Oh, I thought you were going the other way with this. They gave everybody money. It started with Goff. There was Gurley in there too, right? Donald, Cooks, whatever. That there have been diminishing returns. Mina, what should the Rams do here?
Well, I think the Donald contract worked out. He's still the best defensive
Absolutely.
Player in fullback.
Absolutely.
And some of those other contracts, Cooks and Gurley, They're off their books. They have cleared cap space. They can do this. It'll probably come in about $18 to $20 million a year. It won't be easy, but he's still one of the best cornerbacks in football, so it's a no-brainer for them.
Man, you want to get paid. You play for the Rams, or maybe you call their preseason games. That's maybe, yeah, maybe you wear a Radio Shack Rams shirt. We'll move on. Buy or sell two. All right, Clinton Yates, I know you're excited for this one. The Truck Series, NC Education Lottery 200. Chase Elliott the win, and Chase Elliott did Kyle Busch's patented victory bow. You'll recall last week Elliott showed Busch one of the five fingers on one of his two hands. Imitation is the strongest form of flattery or something. I don't know what it is. That's cute, Busch said afterwards. Buy or sell the bow, Clinton.
I'm going to buy it because Chase Elliott's had a rough week. It's not just about what happened with the bird watching. It's not just what happened in the Truck Series. It's about what happened in between. Chase had to pit with two laps left on a caution, and he lost the race to Brad Keselowski. It was awful, and it was the decision that you had to make, even though you do or die. Listen, this guy's had a rough week. I'll give him a bow in this scenario.
Give him a bow. How about you, Mina?
Oh, I love this. NASCAR is crushing it right now. They have a captive audience. They're taking advantage of it. And another way to do that is to create rivalries and stars and beef and storylines. I am all for any trash talking or taunting.
PST?
I'm all for panoramically flipping the bird at people. I accidentally double bird flipped on ESPNU one time. That was a mistake. But here's the problem with Chase Elliott's sort of description of his own actions. He said, with the bow, it wasn't a dig at anyone. Like, we don't believe you, man. Just lean all the way into the blood feud at this point. Get all of the juice out of that squeeze.
Yeah. All of the juice out of that squeeze. You know who's best at the middle finger of anyone on the planet Earth? Infants. Pablo Torre, I'll ask you right now to go find a photo of Violet flipping the bird, because they do it better than anybody. He's probably doing it at me.
They
right
do.
Now. Daddy is done, and it is showdown. Clinton Yates, Mina Kimes, next. I said earlier in today's show, baseball is giving us squadoosh. Well, maybe they haven't. Maybe there is some agreement that spitting probably isn't great in the times of Corona. However, it not being great and it being able to be snuffed out of the game are two different things, because Charlie Blackman's saying, quote, I'm going to 100% spit. He's saying you can't stop. Clinton, do you think baseball players can stop spitting?
I stopped playing competitive baseball over 20 years ago. I'm nearly 40 years old, and I spit like a maniac every single place I am outdoors these days. I'm 1,000% with him. This is impossible to let go of.
I remain befuddled by men and spitting, and it just continues to blow my mind. Look, baseball players are going to spit, but don't talk about it, Charlie. You don't have to tell the world, right? Just keep that one to yourself. I don't know why you've been defiant about this.
How is anything to punish players with this, though? I have no idea. Spitting is a dirty habit.
Idea.
Split the point, we'll move on. Showdown two. John Wall says he's 110% healthy. Hasn't played since December 26, 2018. But 110% healthy. Can the Wizards feel confident that John Wall can stay 110% healthy? Mina?
No, but they're certainly praying. By the way, looking at the NBA standings as we consider these playoff formats, who else was shocked to realize the Wizards were the ninth seed? If he actually can come back healthy, they could compete.
Yeah, I mean, the only number that matters here for me, being from D.C., is the number 8. That is the number of the ward in D.C., the most impoverished and underserved, that John Wall is helping out on rent assistance in this time, these times. Good for you, John Wall. We appreciate it in the community.
He is. He's giving 100% there. That's absolutely sure. There's a point for that, Clinton Yates, and a point for Mina Kimes. We'll move on. It's all even going into showdown 3. Here it is. The most important story in the show, by the way. NFL owners call a live microphone on Browns owner Jimmy Haslam saying they should keep Jerry on permanent mute. Now, lucky for me, I have two experts in the field here. What advice can you give on the perils of Zoom life and the threat of perma-mute, Clinton Yates?
Anything that happens in the context of a Zoom call, be it on video or on audio, is fair game, whether you think you're muted or not. But you have to show up to the call, unlike somebody in the showdown didn't do this morning.
Oh, Oh, Mina, please pick up the pieces of your life.
Oh. I mean, Clinton's been muted so much more than me that I realize he's speaking from a wealth of experience here.
Not anymore, though. Here's a big mute for Mina Kimes. Clinton Yates, take the 30 seconds of FaceTime.
This weekend, we all watched a fantastic showing of golf that involved two quarterbacks and two former golf stars. And I mean former just because they're moving on at the Champions Tour, but they're still some of the best. They said this week they could take this event and make it yearly. I'm sorry, yearly? Why don't we have this bad boy on every week, if not every month? I mean, this is the best form of golf I've seen in a long time. Live microphones, active gambling, and a bunch of super fun between people who know each other. This is the way I want my golf. Off, nothing else.
All right. Since Mina Kimes was reminding us she doesn't get muted often on the show, can I remind her that she said, what was it, Pavement and Slater Kinney and Fugazi were better than Bruce Springsteen? At Mina Kimes!